Good afternoon. Why? Are you awake? Good. I'll keep screaming for the next hour and 15 to win over your full stomachs. I need your help. We just released SQL Server 2012. We have a new version of Power Pivot that I will be showing you. So for a change, everything you see today, you can actually go and use right away. We are also in the middle of planning the next release. And I have a room full of hopefully smart people. You have to have some level of interest in Power Pivot because if you're not here for the seating, that's not very comfortable. So I thought, how can I use all this brain power and ideas? So at the end of the session, I will be asking for your feedback, for ideas to what you would like to see moving forward. So pay attention, and you'll have your chance to better impact the product moving forward. With that, let's get started. You see this fancy machine. My name is Julie Strauss. I am a senior program lead on the analysis services team. My team owns all the client tools for analysis services, all the tools for building semantic models. So Management Studio, the professional tool sets, BITS, Tabular Projects, and obviously Power Pivot. And there's some other very good sessions throughout the week. I'll talk to them at the end of the session, some good reference points for you to go and have a look at as well to learn more. Let's get started. So the agenda for today is all demos. Just because it's easier than to have to make the slides. No. I do have a couple of slides just to set the stage, but after that I'll go into demos. But demoing with a room of 400 people can be challenging because I don't know how much you know. So I will try and adjust the content a little bit if you're willing to help me share what you know. So I need to do the show of hands. How many of you have been using Power Pivot? Great. How many of you have been using the first version of Power Pivot? How many of you have been using the newest version of Power Pivot? Wow, you can come and help me present. That's nice, that's a lot. Okay, that doesn't help me a whole lot because that was half and half. How many has never seen Power Pivot? Okay. That didn't help me either. But okay, I will just do a very quick 2-minute overview for what it is and where it fits, and then I'll dive into, I will be focusing mostly on what's new. So there will be probably a lot of you who know more or less everything I'm going to cover. What I will be covering as well is kind of some of the designs you see, you're thinking, what are they thinking? What's going on in their head? So I'll be talking a little bit about the decisions we're making and why. So hopefully that will give you something new in context of the trade-offs that we sometimes have to make when we make decisions. Okay? So with that, I'll get started. And hopefully I can display. So I'm in Excel 2010, which is a prereq for Power Pivot. And first thing I'm going to do is load some data. So for the few of you that hadn't seen Power Pivot before, Power Pivot is essentially an add-in to Excel that will, it was designed for advanced Excel users to allow them to mash up data from different sources. And behind the scenes, all they are doing is really creating analysis or doing analysis using pivot tables. You have different forms of semantics you can add to it. And at the end of it, you essentially have created a semantic model or a model file that lives inside Excel. That's really what it is. Then, obviously, this session is covering only the UI for working in Excel, so the client pieces. There is a server part to it as well, Power Pivot for SharePoint, where end users can upload to SharePoint. Then in that scenario, you have analysis services running as a service inside SharePoint. And as soon as the user interacts with a model that, or a workbook that has been uploaded to SharePoint, Analysis Services grab that files, restore it to Analysis Services, and now it's the server running inside SharePoint that is doing all the heavy lifting. Now that workbook essentially acts as a model that other users can connect to, either with a separate instance of Excel, with other clients like PowerView, or, well, any client tool that really works with OLAP, or with another instance of Excel. That was a quick tour. So now you're all at the same level. So first thing, small things that we did that I want to point out as well, because they can be hard to find, is in here in the modeling window. For import, I've cheated. I've imported tables already, because that is pretty simple. And for those of you who hasn't tried it, go and try it. Don't trust me. So I'll go in first and import some data. I just want to show you a few changes that we have done for data import. I'm here connecting to Orlando Orange Soft Drink Company. It was just a new company started apparently last night. So we'll go in and look at that. There's two ways of pulling tables in. Either I can write my own SQL query. I'm lazy, so I'll do the easy way. I just select from a list of tables. And I'm just going to pick a single table in here. For those of you who hasn't worked with Power Pivot, you can select a fact table and select related table. We go and read the relationships that already exist in the back end and pull in all related tables. But here I'm going to pick the dates. Oh, first of all, very, very annoying thing that happened in number one, in first release, if I wanted to find a table quickly, there was no good way of doing it. Now I can just select the first letter of the table I'm looking for. I know it's a small thing, but it actually, thank you so much. There's one excited there. Apparently he was as annoyed as I was. So now I can just kick the legger. And the reason I point this out is if you have tried this 50 times and you know it's not working, you're not going to try it in the next version either. So it's just a little pointer. So next I'll go and preview a filter. We have added some advanced filters for text. So also for the new people in the room, the way we allow Excel users to import tables is to mimic an Excel table, and all the end user is doing is filtering that table, and behind the scenes we write the SQL query, because that is really the bottleneck for a business user to get data into the modeling window. So here are the text filters that we have. In the first release, we only had two. I think it was equal and does not equal. Now we have added a little bit more for text filters. So I can just say contain and say JU, and I only see June and July. But that's, I'm building up momentum here. Here's the one that is really important, which is date filters. Because this is really how you want to filter a lot of your data out, because that's where your historic data sits. And here we also had only two choices. Now we are mimicking everything that Excel has with between and after, last month, previous month, etc. So it should enrich that experience a little bit. Okay, I'm not going to actually go in and import the table because I already have it. Let's move to the one most frequently requested feature from V1. Does anyone have a guess what that was? Filter? No, that's gone. We're done with filters. No. One more guess. Relation. Ooh, relationship diagram. We'll get to more relations as well. But yes, we introduced a diagram view. We had a lot of discussions for this one. Do we need it in Excel? Do we not need it in Excel? We did a lot of usability. We were concerned it would be overwhelming. Business users or Excel users don't necessarily think in terms of tables and relationships. But we did a lot of usability, and it proved that it actually did make a lot of sense. And an Excel user doesn't necessarily call it tables and relationships. They call them tables and links, but it's still the same thing. They expected the same behavior. Plus, what we also learned from V1 is that even though we designed this for the Excel user group, there's a lot IT professionals, BI professionals, that really has picked up Power Pivot and enjoy working with it. So I assume there must be some of you in that group as well. So we did want to add some richer capabilities that would satisfy that need as well. So there you go, the diagram view. The diagram view is a fully fledged designer. We could do two things, just do an image to render what is in the model, or we could go to the full extent, and this is a fully fledged designer. So whatever you can do in the data view, you can do in the diagram view, with a few exceptions. The few exceptions are, there's some, for example, calculations. Calculations are data-driven operations. Very often you want to verify what you've built. So we only added creation of calculated columns and calculated fields and meshes to the data view. And this is something, if this is completely wrong for you guys, let us know. We didn't add it to the diagram view for that reason, but also because we're making trade-offs. And for us, that was not the most important piece. If you think differently, please let us know. So that's what I, obviously sorting as well has no relevance in here because I don't see any data, so sorting happens in the data view as well. In the diagram view, you have other operations that are primarily metadata-driven operations, such as creation of hierarchies that we'll get to. That is a feature that just lends itself better to this view, so that is in there. Apart from that, you can be in whatever view you prefer, so we don't have to force you to flip back and forth on all the time. So to prove that, I'll just import some tables. Here I have the soft drink sales from the US market, apart from the ones I apparently have in my orange, Orlando orange drink company. So I'll just copy this table and paste it into Power Pivot, because obviously, just to prove the point, that exactly what I can do in the data view, I can do in here. So I can call this industry trends. Should probably just be competition, since my sales are not there. There's a preview of what I'm pasting, so I can make sure that I have the right data on the clipboard. And what happens is all new tables that you're adding, whether you're importing or copy-pasting, it almost always moves to the far right and is highlighted, because if you have a huge diagram, it can be kind of hard if it just pops up wherever it feels like. So that's why they're sitting over there. Obviously, I want to relate it to something. We still have automatic detection, which will allow end users to automatically detect and create relationships when they add fields to the pivot table. I'm sure you've already seen that, even if that is one of my favorite features. I'm going to spare you for that one today. So in here, again, I can right-click a field, or I can right-click the table level, and I can say create relationship. Exact same dialogue that you know from the data view. So it is the exact same code, exact same operations. But because this is a designer and it is a diagram, we did want to get a little bit more fancy. So what I can do as well is just do drag and drop, and the relationship will be created. And here we highlight the endpoints, which will happen for other tables as well. Highlight the tables when you just mouse over it, and highlight the actual relationship and endpoints when you click the table. Okay. So with that, I'm ready to do some analysis, and I'll go and have a look at some of the improvements we did on this side. So obviously, some of you may already have noticed a change in the field list. Any comments? It's no longer randomly sorted. It is sorted alphabetically. What we did in the first version was it was actually not random. If you had a really nicely crafted database in the back end where your DBA had nicely lined up the field in some relevant order, that was actually the order we picked. So we displayed all the table or the tables in the field list or the fields in the field list the order it entered the model. And for some models, that was just beautiful because you could leverage all that work that some very deliberate person had created. But for an Excel user who just take tables from all over the place, they go to the field list and be like, what's that? That was one of the reasons we added search, so you could easily search for them. Now we changed it to be sorted alphabetically, simply to follow Excel guidelines. It's the exact same thing they do. So let's go ahead and add some fields. I'll add a product category name and a product subcategory. And let's add product name. There you go. And I can search for sales amount, actually. Let's see. Sales amount. Add it. And there you go. So there is a list of all my imaginary soft drinks that I have there. Let me add the copy-pasted table that I just added. I can add industry sales. And actually, let me just remove products. So the funny thing here is obviously I don't have all the imaginary products that I have in my company for every other company in the industry, so it kind of have a lot of empty rows. So if I go to the next level where I have the similarity, that's when I actually get data. But it's a typical scenario when you take data externally and mash it up. But for the trends and what I want to see here, this is perfect. This level is perfectly fine. So you see a difference here? Formatted, not formatted. So for those of you who already used the second version, you have realized that we pick up formatting when it's defined in the model. So in the first version, whenever it was like this, everything came in unformatted, and obviously we can use Excel formatting to go and apply, where is it, the data tab? Who moved that last night? There you go. So every time you create a pivot table, the users would have to go and format those. Now they are persisted as part of the model. So if I go to this table, here was the industry trend I formatted. I can right-click the table and say go to, and it will take me to that particular table in the data view. And you can see, it probably because it came from Word, I just never formatted it. So if I format it now to US dollars, very brainwashed, I can go in here, refresh, and voila, they are persisted. There's one happy person there, thank you. So that's formatting. Obviously, this counts for measures as well. But again, is this a big thing? Maybe, maybe not. If you have 400 users adding fields every day, it actually becomes quite a lot of time. So it is an easy feature, a good feature to have there. Plus, you can obviously, the users can overwrite them and change them as they wish. So it's just the default behavior. So with that, let's move on to, let's say, slices, for example. Let's add some slices. I want to add month and, not month number, I want to add year. So this one. Here, nicely sorted alphabetically, just like the field list. It's consistency in design. But that's not probably really what you want, is it? So normally you would now have to go and create your own table and say 01 January, 02 February, 03 whatever. A demo I've shown many, many, many times because that's how you get natural filtering or natural sorting. In this release, we have added a feature to allow you to sort one column by another column. So have anybody who has used V2 found this one? How many? Does that mean that the rest of you didn't need it? You didn't find it. I'm glad I'm doing this then. Good. So here I have my month column and my month number. I really want to sort the month number, month name with the month number. So I can select this one. Here I have an entry point called sort by other column. I can open it. It has automatically pre-selected the field that I had selected. And I can now say, so it says sort column month by column month number. And I say OK. Now, nothing obviously happens, but if I now sort this one, it filters to January. So it filters this one by this one. And when I go in here and click pay attention, I know it's hard after lunch, but if I refresh this one now, voila. You got rid of the 01, 02, 03. So obviously this, and if I have time, I'll show some other examples. This. It's just because it's obvious what it is doing for month, because that's probably the first thing you want to sort by another column. But there's actually a lot of use areas for this feature. For example, if you have a long list of products, let's say you have 50 products here in a slicer, right? And it comes up in any order. You may have scenarios where you want to add the products that are most frequently used for analysis at the top, right? So I have another example for that, where I simply take a copy of my product table out, I order them the way I want and enumerate them, and then I add that table, create a relationship, and sort by that table. That means that if I have products, for example, named orange something, I can have them show up at the top, meaning that the user doesn't have to keep scrolling in the slicer area, but the ones that are used are right there at the fingertips. So a lot of other use areas, but the month name is just so obvious and very annoying when it's not there. So that was sorting. Let's and formatting. Next thing I want to do is create KPIs. How many of you have been creating KPIs with Power Pivot? A few. Okay, and one of the reasons you may not have used it because you can't really figure out how to enable the entry point. I will take the blame for that, but you can enable it, so that I will show. So to create a KPI, what we are doing is first you create a measure, and we take that measure and transform it into a KPI. We add more richness to it and turn it into a KPI. So before these controls actually are enabled, I have to have measures in my model. Slight design flaw, but there you go. I'll take the blame. Otherwise, I'll blame Casper, who sits down there. Not really his fault, though. But since he can't defend himself, I might as well. So I will go in. First of all, I want a measure for industry sales. So I want to take my sales amount and compare that with my industry trends. So really what I want to do is calculate my market share, right? It's a calculation that I want many users to use over and over again. It's a metric that I want to monitor. So basically, I want to create a KPI where I compare this one to this one. So I'll go and create some calculations. We have added a new measure grid, that we call it, that lives down here, which is really a free-form calculation area. I'll get back to that and explain a little bit more later on. But to do very quick calculations, I can simply go in here and click Auto Sum, a functionality you may know from Excel. When you're working with Excel tables, I can create a quick calculation for sum, average, count, etc. So I'll just create this one. For industry sales, automatically, it will just take the sum of this column. And I'll just go and create one for my retail sales as well. And I'll find sales amount. I think this is the one. And I will create that. If the measure grid isn't displayed, we will create it on top. You see, there you go. Okay. So let me go back into my pivot table. I can create the KPIs from in there as well, but I'm going to do it from here, and I will go and find total sales somewhere. Oh, yeah, it hasn't refreshed. I have such a huge button in my face, and I don't see it. It's because of the lights. Let me see. There you go. So now, if I click sales amount, I'll just remove this one, move this one up. If I click sales amount, magically this guy will get enabled. So in case you're wondering, you have to select a measure in the field list for that control to be enabled. So now I can open it and say create KPI. Up here, it has pre-selected that calculation that I already have. And now I can choose either a measure and absolute value. Absolute value is just a constant. So if you're calculating the average hour you expect an employee to work per week, that never changes. It doesn't matter, hopefully, who you are. Well, it probably does. But for this analysis, it doesn't matter who you are. You still have to work the same time. Here, I want to obviously use a measure because I want the numbers and the calculation to change depending on what I have on my pivot table. So I can now choose some of industry trends and add that. And there's a KPI. Super simple. No? Now that I have it there, I can also obviously go and edit the changes. What I didn't set my thresholds. So this says if I have, I can either move them by moving as thumbnails or simply entering my numbers in there. Now, what this is saying is that if I have less than 30% of the market share, I'm showing red. If I have more than 90, I'm pretty happy, and that shows my target. Okay, I can obviously change the graphics for what are displayed. We pick up the graphics from the Excel side. I can change the range, so I can have higher ranges and obviously colors. And then I have this guys, which will basically change how we display them. So here we say red is negative. Here I say either I live in a country where red is not necessarily negative, green is negative, so I just have the ability to change that color scheme, or if you're working with loss, for example, you want to change that. We also have this one, which is basically closer to target is better. So if you're working in manufacturing and you want to have machine park utilization, you pick the one where you don't want too little and not too much. So better to target is better. And just the opposite as well. So that's really the settings. What I want as well is when you go in here, I don't really know what these means, right? I think I said less than 40 is bad and more than 80 is good. But if I'm an end user now and I didn't build that KPI, I don't really know that. So what we have added is the annotations in here. I can add descriptions. So I can say this KPI is a metric for market share. I can say value description. I can say green is good, red is bad, just in case I'm in doubt. And I can say, actually, that will go down here. Oops. And I could say here, less than 40% is sad. Okay? So now, when I mouse over the field list, I can see that. So this is for the overall KPI and each of these. So that's pretty useful as well, as long as you know they're there. The other thing for calculations as well, I can edit this formula. Here we have added a line as well, which can be useful either for describing how you came to that calculation, which obviously the end users will see as well, but we do see that used for kind of annotations, but also to explain where the numbers came from. So again, they will show up. Inside the Power Pivot window, we have the same for tables. You right-click, and you can add a description in here. If you show nothing, if you don't have anything, we just show you the name, okay? So that counts for columns as well. So that was annotation. So let's talk a little bit more about the measure grid. So this is a funny thing. We did a lot of research for how easy it is to get started and build certain scenarios with Power Pivot. One of the hardest, all of this I've shown so far was pretty easy to do, pretty intuitive. One of the challenges was when you have to create your own calculations, which you probably need to do at some point. So for example here, let's say I had sales and cost, and I want to calculate budget, for example. That's a pretty common scenario, and it's pretty simple, right? Profit. So I want to take one column minus another column. It's pretty simple. But the challenging part here is that it's not a two-dimensional space. It's three-dimensional. So it's pretty hard to understand the concept. What very often happens when we ask users to do it, they will go out here to the column in the pivot table and start calculating. But it very quickly, we have a person there laughing. Either he has tried or he has seen people who has tried to do that. So it's a little bit of a hard concept to do. So that was why we added the grid down here. So basically what we did, we took this away, which is how V1 looked like, and we said, if you now needed to do, for example, budget or sum of sales, how would you do that? And most said, oh, I want a button up here or a button down at the end that give me the sum and add it either at the top of the table or at the bottom. So that was kind of how the measure grid came along. So if I go in here, and I can also multi-select, so I can select these three one at a time and select auto-sum, and we create all of them. So this doesn't obviously solve everything. It just gives me a quick measure. This is the same gesture that I do as if I take just that column and drag it into the field list, what we call implicit measures. So they're just generated on the fly. So far, I haven't really done a whole lot, but I have enabled them to quickly generate some calculations. Now, the next thing comes when you want to look at profit, for example. So here I have product cost and sales amount. In here, it's very easy. Most users would right-click here. That's new as well. I don't have to go at the end of the table. I can insert a column in the middle here. I will say now equals the sales amount minus the cost. There I have the column. Now I call this one profit. There you go. This is also new. Calculated columns has alternating colors just to make it easier to see where you can go and change your formulas. And now I can do some of this profit. That was profit. Something that users that are used to Excel and not to modeling concepts would just, they couldn't complete it. They got stuck. So the reason for introducing the measure grid like this was to try and take a bigger lump of users and move them over the next hurdle, because now you can start doing a lot more. It doesn't solve everything. There's still things that are complicated and that has a learning curve, or you need to actually just sit down and learn it. Casper has a session tomorrow, I think at 5, for going through, fully focused on DAX, both existing formulas and some of the new stuff we have added. So is that true? So I will highly recommend you to go to that session if you plan on working with DAX. So this was just one way of doing it. Another way I can use the grid is just I can type anywhere. So I can just say now I want to create a new profit. I can only have one measure with the same name, so I need to find a new name. So now I say, actually, let me not give it a name to start with. All I want to do is I want to take the sum of equal, the sum of the sales amount minus the cost. So now I'm taking one measure minus another measure. And this is really the formula that you would have to write if you do it on the pivot side. And it's not really all necessarily that intuitive to know that you need the sum of each minus the sum of the other. But in this environment, it's much easier to do. And what happened was when we did, and I know it's the fact, we've had a lot of feedback from those of you who are absolutely aware of what you're doing, because a lot of you, who I think of as professionals, got really frustrated with this grid. What are you going to use it for? Why can I have measures everywhere? There's no system. All the measures need to be on the left side in a line. But that's because the thinking method is just so different. So what happened here was when we compared the two user group, actually the Excel users figured a way to do profit in instantly, whereas the professional who can think multidimensional are used to creating measures, for example, in analysis services, took much longer time. But anyway, so now this one, I can control X and I can control V. The calculation doesn't change. The result doesn't change. It's the same formula. I can have it wherever I want. So now when I didn't add a name, all the autosums that I did here, they automatically, we say sum of, and then it inherits the column name. When I don't, I just start typing equal. What happens is we give it a name, because this is what shows in the field list in order for you to be able to pick it. And then we have colon, which really separates the text from the formula. So we just add that. And so now I can obviously go and rename this. I can put it to the side, and I can say, if I could spell, newest prophet. Okay? And it will just apply that, newest prophet. If I, by accident, remove this little colon, it will tell me, now you're going to change this into text. Are you sure you want to do that? And I'm not so sure I want to do that. But so I can have just text in here as well. Whoops. No, didn't want to do that. It's because I haven't committed it. There you go. So I can just have text in here as well, which will just be in italic, just so you can. So what you can do here is group your calculations, give them small headers, and for those of you who need a system, you can make your own system. Okay? So in short, the location of the meshes in this group, in this grid, is exactly what you want it to be. Your own system. Okay? Any questions so far? Yeah. In the grid or in period? It's how can you, or can we take it in the end? Can we do that, and then we can repeat it in the mic? It's basically how to do more complex calculations. Okay. So with that was the mesh grid. So let's go back and have a look more of the what you can do in the diagram view. That has a little bit to do with size as well. So the reason we actually added the diagram view in the first place was that as part of this release, we also introduced a new modeling environment in Visual Studio called the Tabular Project Type, which will allow you to build semantic models with exact same ease of use as you can in Power Pivot, but it just lives inside Visual Studio. And that tool set, which will be covered in a session tomorrow, is optimized for professionals who want to live in Visual Studio. And for professionals, you cannot have a semantic model without having a diagram view. That is really how we know, based on feedback, how most of you want to work. So we had that choice. Now that we built it for the professional tool set, do we want to surface it in Power Pivot as well? And we decided to do so. So in here, it becomes easier as well when you work with larger models. We have the minimap here, which I bet none of you have found either, but it's in there to make me navigate. Now this is a relatively small model, so it's not all that obvious, but you can zoom in there. You can zoom all the way you want. There you go. And fit to 100 and fit to screen. So there's some navigation things there. So now we're saying, for all the meshes that I just created, how can I find them again, since there isn't an alphabetical list? And some of the things that we have done here is, not just for meshes, but in general for finding stuff, we have added display filters up here. So now I just removed all the columns. So it makes it very easy for me to find my KPI. All of the objects have different object types, and find all my different measures. So if I want to go to my newest prophet, I find it in the list there. I can right-click and go to, and it will take me straight to the formula in there. So again, this was a compensation for not allowing you to do calculations in the diagram view. We allowed you to navigate back and forth. So, that was just another way. Obviously, when you have more object hierarchies, we'll be looking at in a minute, you will be able to filter down to that as well. In addition to that, we introduced perspectives, which will also help you work with larger models, but I'll cover that in a second. Now, when I created my pivot table in here, you saw that I went to three different tables, my product category, subcategory, and product, and I pulled one single field from each. The product table has a lot of fields that I probably want to use. It has other attributes like color and size and stuff like that. So that is really my main table, but I had to pull in from two other tables as well. If this is just for me, that's probably fine. I know that where they sit. If it's a model that has to be used by 400 users, I don't want them to A, see a cluttered field list. I want to clean it up to only show one product table. But in addition to that, I don't want them to really have to understand where the fields are sitting. So for them, I want to create a user-defined hierarchy where I just allow them to click one field in the field list called product, and it gets the hierarchy in there in a single click. So that we have added as well. Two things need to happen before I can really do that. First of all, I want to create a hierarchy, and the hierarchy should sit in the product table. Now, normally I would have pre-prepared this, so I have all my fields in one table, because we do not support hierarchies across multiple tables. In this scenario, it's okay, because I actually don't want to keep the other two tables anyway. I don't want to display them, but you may have other scenarios where you want to create a hierarchy with fields from different tables. So the way to work around that is to use DAX functions to pull in those fields into a single table. So that I'll do first. So I'll go to my, what I basically want to do is take this product subcategory name and pull it into here, and the product category and pull it into the product table as well. It's tempting to just drag and drop, but I can promise you that's not what happens when I do that. So I'll go in here, and I'll insert another column. And here I'll say equal, and I use the related function. Again, I encourage you to go to Casper's session tomorrow. The related function basically follows the relationship and pulls that field into the table. I can start typing my formula, or I can use semi-select, where I can simply go to the table, pick the column that I want to pull in, and then end it with bracket, which basically confirms that, and now I can just go ahead and rename it, and I call this product, I could just call this category. There you go. I'll go and pull the next one in, insert, equal, related. I go to product subcategory, pick this one, end with brackets, and say OK, and I call this one subcategory. So now I have my tables, my two fields in there. That means that I can create my hierarchy. Now they sit down here, right? This is getting a little harder to work with, so let me just maximize this table. Now you see everything in the background is blurred. That's not a defect. It is because right now, this is my design surface, right? So the relationships you see that go in here are obviously not valid. So all I have to do now is pick my product name, multi-select, category, and subcategory. And right-click and say create hierarchy. Goes directly into rename state, so I'll call this one products. If I already had a field called products, I would have to either rename the old one. I can only have a single name in the same table. So there you go. That was creation of a hierarchy. That was pretty simple. No? You're definitely not impressed, but that's okay. I can keep going. Yes? So question is, did the order that I selected them have an impact? Yes and no. The selection order doesn't have an impact, but the cardinality does have an impact. So this one is the flawless demo, carefully picked fields. No, it's true. I am going to show you the less flawless one, but since he prompted it, I will go to that less flawless. So we detect the cardinality. So what happens here is I have only four categories, 20 subcategories, and much more products. So it comes out like that. Doesn't matter which way I select them, which we had in the original desire, but we didn't get to it. So this has nothing to do with the order of the selection, but it has to do with the cardinality of the content. So let me show you, because you have another very typical hierarchy, year, semester, month, right? That will not come out that way. So you can easily rearrange. So this is considered a good help to get started in many scenarios, but not necessarily all scenarios. So I'll get to that. So here I have my product. You see I have the same repeated name in brackets. So for example here, I have product name. What I want to show to the user consuming the model, I don't want it to be product name. I just want it to be product, for example. That's all I need. But now I have what we call the original column names. I can hide them here. It's an option. It counts for across the model. But it's just for display in here. It doesn't display for the end user. But it's just that if I now go and delete this guy, you see I have the watermark down there showing that I will also delete that field. So having the source name there is just for easier keep tracking of what that field actually ties back to. What I can do, however, I can hide this. Because now all I want is when I insert a new pivot table, let me just go and do that. Insert a new pivot table. Now when I go, let me just pick sales amount. There you go. If I insert, I go to my product table, now you will see, you should see, there's my hierarchy. So with a single click, I get the whole path in there. Okay? Yay. Now you're waking up. So, again, if you have lots of users, this is definitely worth the time that it takes to go and do that. But I still have, first of all, I show the product name here. You may want to keep that. In some instances, you do want to keep that. In others, no. You just want to have the hierarchy. And as well, I still have the product category tables here. So I'll go in and hide these. I will hide the product name, category. Ooh, not all of these. Control. Category and subcategory, right-click, and hide from client tools. Client tools means any third party connecting and consuming the model. So here it's Excel, it's a field list, it's a Power View, etc., other client tool that will actually consume the model. So now you can see they're dimmed out just to indicate that they are hidden. I would also like to go and hide this guy and this guy, multi-select, hide from client tools. Now it's hidden. And here we had another conflict for sharing the two tool sets. If you are a professional and used to building content for people to consume it, you most likely will never want to completely hide these. You want to see them. And I can still work with these. I can open it. I can add more hierarchies, do calculations. I can do whatever I want with these. They're still there. They're just not displayed for the consumer. If you're an Excel user, you have never seen anything like that. Why are they not going away? I've been hiding them. I don't want them to clutter up my view. So there were very conflicting interests on what to do when you actually hide stuff. So we added a feature here called Show Hidden. Whoops. So when you are in Power Pivot and you're an Excel user, you don't want that, you just remove them. And if you are a person who likes to see what you have, then you do that. Some of you may have noticed in the first version, we also had an option called hide for me, but not the end users. That we have removed for some obvious reasons. that didn't fly well with the professionals. Actually, there was a lot of Excel users who did use it, but once we started sharing that tool set, that option became very awkward. So we removed it. And there is an upgrade path. So there is a logical path to what actually happens. Okay, so that is hide. So let's have a look at perspectives. In here, we have, if you've heard, and we get a lot of questions, we've heard there's perspectives, I don't find them anywhere. That is because we are hiding them. In here, we have the ability to switch to advanced mode. When I do that, I get an advanced tab. So why are we doing stuff like this for you, making it so hard? We had a lot of feedback from users and customers who had deployed the first version of Power Pivot. We went to them with feedback, do you want this, do you want that? And it was like, no, no, no. Power Pivot is perfect as it is right now. It's efficient for my not-so-advanced users. And if you keep adding stuff, it's becoming more complex, it's becoming more intimidating, they'll have to take classes, and we won't allow them to use it anymore. So we actually had customers threatening us to not use it if you just keep adding. It's not about just adding, it's just right. We knew it wasn't just right. Like, hierarchies is good, calculations are good. So we added an advanced tab. And the design principle was, the design goal was, you should be able to find these features if you know that you need them. Yes? No, you can't do that, unfortunately. So question is, can you use policies to deploy that, define that? We haven't enabled that yet. And we are actually looking for the next release, what we're going to do with this moving forward. This is actually a per-user setting. So you're asking what happens for when you deploy to SharePoint. And this is per-user setting. So everything, I will see the advanced tab in all of my workbooks. Okay? So there you go. There's the advanced tab. And I have some features in here that I'll be walking through. First one of them is perspectives. So perspectives, in short, is the ability to create different views of your model. And we had we have perspectives in OLAP as well, which is really where the request came from. We have expanded the use of it a little bit to cover some more areas than what we do with OLAP, so I'll go through that. But the idea here is simply to create different views that ideally that the end users can use when they consume the model. There's some challenges with that in Excel. We'll go and have a look at that. But the primary use for this feature is actually when you deploy to SharePoint. When I'm working with this model, I am the admin anyway. I can see anything. So it has nothing to do with security. It has nothing to do with what I'm connecting to when I'm working locally in Excel. But as soon as I deploy this workbook to SharePoint, to the gallery, and other users connect with a new instance of Excel, they are now connecting to an instance on analysis services, meaning you'll see the exact same selection criteria that you see when you connect to an ONAP cube. So as soon as you've defined perspectives, before you connect, you will get a dialogue telling what you want to connect to, the whole model, which is called default, I think, and then you have your different perspectives. And now if you connect to a perspective, all you see in that field list is the field from that perspective. There's no flipping back and forth. It's not secured in any way. You can get to it, but that's basically what you see in there. So that was the reason we did apply perspectives to the Power Pivot workbook, because in a lot of ways, it doesn't make the exact same sense because you can use it locally. But we did find other use areas that I will show you. So first, I'll go ahead here and create a new perspective. It comes up when rename state. I'll call this first one reseller sales. Reseller sales. Obviously, you can see the tables and everything in here. So I'll add probably most of them and just reselect retail, territory I don't want, and industry trends I don't want. And apparently I don't want customers either. So now, I've defined my perspective and I have added all the fields. I can obviously deselect the fields from each table that I don't want to include. Now it shows as semi-selected or halfly selected. Very easily, I can create a copy of this one, rename it, and this would be retail. And the only change I'm going to do, which is why I'm making a copy, I don't want the reseller details, but I do want retail. That's super easy. No? No. Nah, whatever. Thank you. So, and I can create a separate one called customers. Okay, that's so hard to spell. And I'll just add one, just so you can see. And I'll say, okay. And obviously, you see nothing happens in here. What's that about? Two things happen again. If I deploy to SharePoint, now that kicks in. But the other thing I can do is when I go to the Excel field list, now this one will refresh. And you see now I have an extra little drop-down here called Default Perspective. That's because right now I'm actually connected to the entire model. I'm connected. I see the entire model. But here I can select my perspectives. So if I go in here, let me just select customer. There's the single table, right? And if I select retail, I only see the fields related to retail. So what's the point of this? Twofold. It is to give you an ability to check what you've built before you deploy to SharePoint. But it also gives you the ability to work with a smaller subset because the field list can become quite cluttered at times, so if you have a lot of fields. So it's just a way to filter out the field list. As you see, my pivot table obviously doesn't break. It doesn't change anything. What I have there is still there because it's not secure in any way. It's simply just a way to filter what I see in the field list. Another use area that we added is to see perspective selection in here. That means when I now select retail, I minimize this view as well. And this is super helpful when you work with larger models because it's much easier to navigate. Each layout is per perspective, so you can just lay out exactly what makes sense for this set of tables and then work with it. What else? What I wanted to say? Yeah, so now if I keep working in this perspective, let's say that I work with sales data and I add specific sales measures or I do specific hierarchies for sales. Everything I do in here now is applied to obviously the default perspective, which is the whole model, as well as this particular perspective. It's not added to all the other perspectives, only to this one. And it's just to reduce that you have to go and build it, now go back to perspectives and add the new fields. It's just to be able to do it all in context of where you are. Okay? So what else do I want to show? I will talk a little bit about implicit measures. I should do that. Here we have implicit measures. It's grayed out. So implicit measures are the measures that you create when you're in the field list. You have not created, you yourself have not created a specific calculation. All you've taken is a column, for example, sum of sales, and dragged to the values field. That's an implicit measure. The reason that we added visibility to these are that, for example, if I go in here, as you saw I did, if you did pay attention, in the data view, when I created sum of retail sales, right, I already had sales amount from before. I can only have one per column. So now any second one I add, if I go in here and add again, now that will be sum of sales amount 3. The thing is, you can't have one with the same name, but if you don't know you have implicitly created a measure by dragging a field to the field list, you will see that all the ones you create in here will have number 2 after it. So the reason we allowed you to do is go in here and show implicit measures. Now, this is the guy that is messing up my numbering. You see, there's a tiny little icon there with a pivot table. It means it was created in context of the pivot table. So now I can go and clean them up. Another thing, you could drag year to values by mistake. Now you get count of year in your model. That count of year will show in autocomplete, in most places. They won't show in the field list because we don't show implicit measures, but it will show other places. So if you accidentally created count of year, you're not going to use it for anything. This is simply a way of cleaning up all those measures. The thing to be aware of, that even if you create these implicit measures, you can use them in other calculations, so you can reference them. That's why we never delete them. We just hide them. We keep them there. But now we give you, obviously, if you delete that and you've used it in another calculation, reference to it, then you're breaking your formulas. But this will give you a way of at least having an option to clean them up, which we didn't have before. So now I can go and delete that one, and it will tell me that it's currently used in a pivot table. Do I want to break my pivot table? No, thank you very much. I don't want to do that. But that you can do. We always give you a warning if it's used, if it's not. Yes, question? Right there. So question is, can you show how you enable the show implicit measures button? So that's right there. Oh, that was because I was in the diagram view. So yes, that's a good point. As soon as I'm in here and in the measure grid, this is how it becomes enabled. But I will actually see them. I will see the implicit measures in the diagram. I think I do anyway. Let me check. Oh, you should see them in here. Maybe it was because I don't know. Yes, you should see them in here. But you can't enable that control from in there. So that was the implicit measures. Now I have some other fields in here. I'm not going to spend too much time on, but I will encourage you to go to a session tomorrow midday, I think, to explain to you how to build the perfect model for Power View. Did you see the Power View demo at the keynote? Some nice visualizations, interactive visualizations that you can build on top of the semantic model. A lot of those settings and a lot of the magic is controlled from within the semantic model. So you can set properties, and Casper will be walking through this tomorrow in his session. But you basically have the ability to, when a user clicks a table, what are the default fields that should be added to the canvas? That's all controlled from these reporting properties. The reporting properties we built for a 10:15 tomorrow morning. Yes, you better not go out tonight. So, and not you either, Casper. You can set those properties to define a lot of those end-user behaviors, which are super useful. He will go through that tomorrow. What else are there? I think that's basically it. There are some smaller changes that we have done as well that is worth mentioning in here. For example, if I go back to my first pivot table, I just remove them. Let me just quickly create a new pivot table, insert a new pivot table, where I can work with multiple calculations. So if I click, for example, my product hierarchy, and I want to show, let's say, retail sales, and I want to show, for example, profit and sales amount, doesn't really matter. And I want to show it across time. So let me pick year. There you go. Whoops. Let me put it in here. There. So this is the way that you would have most of the fields show up with the first version of Power Pivot. You could now use the Excel field list. You can still enable the Excel field list by right-click, show field list. This is really the Excel field list that we are just suppressing, because we have more functionality for example, laying out the slices, etc. But now you can actually nest these values. So for example, so now you can group profit and sum within each year, but now we are putting this into a group, and you can very easily move that around, okay? So now I have, for each of the measures, I have the years nested within them. And I can also put them on rows. You could not do that in the previous release. So now I have, for each of the product categories, I have the two measures nested beneath them or on top. So now I have two other ways of grouping it. So it's basically just adding more flexibility to how you can more actively lay out the fields in the pivot table. With that, I think I have covered most. Before I'll go to Q&A, I want to now ask for your participation. I had a lot of people in here who has used the product, both the first version, now you know what in the second, and those who has used the second version. I have one question for you. Actually, I have three. If you could decide one, two, or three top features that you would like to see in the next release, then up here, I have some small snippets of paper. There's room for three areas of functionality you can add. There's pens. So when you leave the room, if you have any ideas, any suggestions, things you would like us to take into account for the next release, take a piece of paper, fill it out, put it on the table over there. Deal? At least one of you not. Come on. Deal. I have one. That's good. With that, I want to open it up for questions. And for those of you leaving, please remember to thank you for attending, and please remember to fill out your evals. Oh, great question. Do you handle many-to-many relationships? So actually, I knew that I'd forgotten something. Huh? More at five. Okay. Let me not steal from Casper's content, but let me show you just one thing. Default perspective, you see there are dotted lines in here. So two parts of many-to-many. Do you handle the actual many-to-many? Casper will be handling that, some of that. What we have changed in here is the ability to have more than one relationship between a given set of tables. So in the first version of Power Pivot, whenever you had multiple relationships between a set of tables, when we imported, when we got to the first one, we would stop. We'll just pick the first relationship we came to. We'll give you a warning saying that you already have one, so you don't get the 2, 3, 10 others. Now we do allow you to get them in. So what that gives you is this funny picture. So you have the solid lines are what we call active relationship. You can only have one active between a given set of tables, but we allow you to have inactive relationship. And there's two reasons for doing this. First of all, it's kind of obvious that there's something here I should look at. So now if you right-click it, you will realize that this is inactive. If I could right-click, that's hard. There, I can now mark this as active. I can't actually do that until I've taken an active and made inactive. And it's not because we are that dense. But the point is that when you do this, you are actually, if users already have changed, have created pivot tables, your results will change as well. Now what happens is when you add a field from the two tables, let's say you have date, typically sales and ship date and order date and sales amount, if you already have created a relationship or created a pivot table using fields from those two tables, the user will see the result that came by traveling the active relationship. Now, if you go back and change about with it, obviously the amounts will change. So the idea is here to show them graphically in here that you can see that they are inactive, they are there. So the idea, before you let the users loosen it, make sure that you have the right activity level for them. What you can do, though, is even, let's say I do want to show sales amount for the ship date and sales amount for order date. There's two ways you can do it. Either you can import the date table twice, which is probably what you do today, and you can create a relationship for each because now it's not a given set of tables. You have separate tables. What happens is now in the field list, you have two date tables showing. That's a way of working around it. With the ability to have the inactive relationships, we've also added a new DAX function called useRelationship. That function allows you to travel the inactive relationship. So now I would, instead of having two different tables, I have two different calculations. One, sales amount for ship date and sales amount for that. And I'm sure Casper will be covering that piece. One session, I'm repeating, obedient as I am. One session, a session tonight on many-to-many relationships by Alberto. So definitely recommended to going to that one. You're welcome. Other questions? You still have your question about how to do it. And I don't know how to answer that in less than a long time. But if you would want to come up afterwards, we can take it offline also to better understand what your question is. Any other questions that I feel like answering? No. There's a question down there. So the question is it possible to take a model, upload to SharePoint, and show it to different users? So is that a way of defining security? Is that what you're asking? Yeah. Yes, so there is, whenever you upload this workbook to SharePoint, this workbook, including the model, is treated as a SharePoint document. That means I can secure the document or not secure the document. So I have access level on the document. For row-level security, that's a feature we are enabling in the Visual Studio environment. So you can take this workbook, import it into Visual Studio to the tabular project type, where row-level security is one of the differentiating features that we have in there. So when you're in there, you can define row-level security, and when users access it, it will actually determine what each of the users can see. Yes. So the workbook would have the one model, but users will retrieve different results based on what they have permission to see. There's a session on that tomorrow at 3, I think. Not on just security, but on the tabular project type. So in short, there are four features that differentiate the two environments. The design goal we had was we don't want to force the user to change environment, depending on which features they want. But there are some features that we have only added. One is row-level security. Another one is partitioning. So when a workbook grow very large, you can do partitioning in the professional toolset, meaning the difference being you don't deploy to SharePoint anymore, you would deploy to an instance of analysis services. So you can deploy partitioning. You also have direct query in the tabular mode, meaning you don't no longer necessarily cache the data, you just pass through to the SQL Server database. That's also another feature that we have in there. There's another question down there. So question is there any other levels of relationship that are supported? We not in this release. I highly recommend that you are one of the people that go up to the list here and write feedback. That is something we are definitely considering, but would like to have more feedback on inner joined out, all of that, more flexibility for how to create the relationships. Okay. With that, I'm out of time. I will hang around a little bit. Please, some of you go up and take a piece of paper and help vote for what we should do. Thank you.